071678, United States versus Victor Wiley. Mr. Drury. Good afternoon. Was it hard getting up here today?
I actually came down last night.
Oh, was it hard for you?
It wasn't actually.
No. Okay.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is John Drury, and I represent the appellant, Victor Wiley. In this appeal, Mr. Wiley challenges the length of his sentence on Sixth Amendment grounds. Specifically, the District Court considered conduct for which Mr. Wiley was never convicted in enhancing his sentence under the guidelines. Moreover, the District Court's sentencing determination was also informed by conduct for which Mr. Wiley was actually acquitted.
Where in the record below will we find Mr. Wiley preserving a Sixth Amendment challenge to his sentence? The government argued, you know, that we should be applying plain error review, and you didn't respond. And unless the argument was preserved, of course, we can, you know, we have to review for plain error.
Trial counsel did not specifically raise the Sixth Amendment argument below. In the objections to the pre-sentence investigation report, trial counsel did raise the issue of relying on enhancement, relying on conduct that was never charged. That issue was presented, but specifically, the Sixth Amendment was not raised below. But even under a plain error analysis, based on the current law over the last couple of years, we still contend that the Sixth Amendment was violated here. And before I begin, I do understand, and we do concede as we do in the brief, that this court has ruled in recent cases such as Hearn and Horn and Price that the United States versus Watts, the Supreme Court's opinion, did survive cases such as Booker and Blakely and the like. So we do concede that. We once again maintain that the court should reconsider that decision. And so that is what Mr. Wiley's appeal. Excuse me.
Do we know the status of the petition for cert in Mercado?
I do not know the status. I do not. The last time I checked, I did not see whether or not it had been, whether or not cert had been granted or not. So I'm not sure about that. There are, to my understanding, and I don't have the case captions in front of me, there are other cases also where this issue has been presented in cert motions before the court. So with that understanding and conceding that, I guess before discussing the case law, just a brief background of Mr. Wiley's circumstance. He was charged with a gun crime and a drug crime. There was also some other charges that weren't pursued earlier. Right before trial, Mr. Wiley pled guilty to the gun crime. He went to trial on the drug crime, and he was acquitted at trial of that crime. During the sentencing hearing and in the pre-sentence investigation report, references were made to the acquitted conduct that Mr. Wiley, the drug crime for which Mr. Wiley was acquitted, and also references were made, and a sentencing enhancement was authorized based on the conduct for which Mr. Wiley was not convicted, and the charges were not pursued. So our argument right now is based on that those enhancements should not have been given under the Sixth Amendment. And fully conceding the Hearn and Horn cases that, excuse me, that are out there. Solely taking into account the base offense level authorized by Mr. Wiley's guilty plea alone, Mr. Wiley was looking at 84 to 105 months imprisonment. Once you also consider the offense level being raised for by the conduct for which he was not acquitted, that bumped it up to 120 to 150, and Judge Herndon then went ahead and sentenced Mr. Wiley to 120 months imprisonment. And so our argument is that that was 15 months more than would have been authorized solely by the guilty plea. And you're well familiar with the case law, but turning to the case law, there have been a series of Supreme Court cases over the last 6-7 years that have shown that the Sixth Amendment considerations play a greater and greater role in sentencing enhancement questions, especially under the federal guidelines after Booker. And these cases have shown a trend, and the trend is toward a more reduced role in judicial fact-finding, resulting in enhanced sentences. Most importantly, as recognized in Blakely, a defendant's Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial and a reasonable doubt standard is implicated whenever a judge seeks to impose a sentence that is not solely based on facts reflected in the jury verdict or admitted by the defendant. And here, Mr. Wiley admitted, he pled guilty to the gun crime, but he did not admit the other facts, which was for unlawful restraint and a domestic battery, a charge that was never pursued against him. Based on Blakely, Apprendi, and other cases, any separate factual determination made by a judge which enhances the defendant's sentence beyond that authorized by a guilty plea or jury verdict, we contend violates the Sixth Amendment. Now, going through some of the cases, first in Apprendi, the court held that other than the fact of a prior conviction, any fact that increases the penalty for a crime beyond the prescribed statutory maximum must be submitted to a jury and proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, in Apprendi, that resulted in the defendant, who was convicted of a crime carrying a maximum sentence of 10 years, being then given a sentence of 12 years based on there being additional fact-finding. Then, going forward in Blakely, the defendant pled guilty to a crime similar to Mr. Wiley, and the maximum sentence for that crime, after certain considerations, was 53 months imprisonment. And the trial court again found additional facts, specifically that he committed the crime with deliberate cruelty. And based on that additional fact-finding, the defendant was given 90 months imprisonment. Again, both of these cases, the Supreme Court said that that was inappropriate and reversed. And furthermore, then in Booker, the defendant was convicted of a crime carrying a sentencing range of 210 to 262 months. And again, the judge found additional facts under a preponderance of the evidence standard and sentenced the defendant to a higher guidelines range, resulting in more than 100 months imprisonment than would have been authorized otherwise. And again, the Supreme Court, as you well know, reversed that. And just last year, wrapping up in the Cunningham case, the court reversed a decision based on California's determinate sentencing law. And there, the defendant was sentenced to an additional 4 years based on judicial fact-finding. And according to the court in that case, if the jury's verdict alone does not authorize the sentence, if instead the judge must find an additional fact to impose the sentence, the Sixth Amendment is not satisfied. So, wrapping up, these cases, we contend, all indicate the value and import the Supreme Court has placed on the Sixth Amendment in recent years and the trend towards a reduced role in fact-finding being allowed to enhance sentences. The right to trial by jury and the reasonable cause standard has been upheld in these cases, and allowing judges to determine certain facts and then enhance sentences has not been allowed. Now, whether or not the district court's decision here was mandated or discretionary, the fact remained that Mr. Wiley's guilty plea alone carried a sentence in the range of 84 to 105 months after taking into account his reduction for acceptance of responsibility. It was only the judge's ability to rely on other conduct, conduct never put before a jury and never admitted by Mr. Wiley, that allowed for the sentence he actually received, which was 120 months. Now, that 15-month disparity doesn't seem like a lot in context of some of these other cases, but it's still an extra 15 months that, based on the jury based on Mr. Wiley's plea alone, would not have been authorized. So just wrapping up, but for the judicial fact finding here, Mr. Wiley's sentence would not have been more than 105 months. And even though I readily concede that that is not the current state of the law, that the current state of the law allows reliance on acquitted conduct and allows reliance on conduct not convicted, not charged, we would still ask once again for reconsideration of that, or in the alternative, preservation of the appeal in case that something does change at the Supreme Court level. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Ms. Gorofsky.
May it please the Court. My name is Nicole Gorofsky. I represent the United States in this matter. Because the sentence given to Mr. Wiley in this case was within the statutory range, consistent with the goals of 3553, and with the consistent with the guidelines, it is constitutional and reasonable. Now, counsel for the appellant argues that this sentence was not authorized solely by the guilty plea, and I think that's a misinterpretation of the law. The statutory range is authorized by the guilty plea. The guidelines are no longer mandatory, and therefore anything, the case law states, within the prescribed statutory max is authorized by the guilty plea or by a jury's verdict in a different case. The cases repeatedly say that as long as it's within the statutory range, it's authorized. Even, I think noticeably missing from the appellant's argument is Rita versus the United States, which is the most recent to discuss this issue. And it says in that case, the Supreme Court stated, even if that requires or allows some sort of judicial fact-finding, if it's within the statutory range, it's authorized by the Constitution and does not implicate the Sixth Amendment.
You know, although the defendant and his counsel may not have used the word Sixth Amendment in raising the objection to the four-point assessment, isn't it clear from the objections that they did raise that the objection was grounded in the Sixth Amendment? I mean, the defendant himself tried to explain the problem to the court at page 10 of the sentencing transcript, which is at page 15 of the appendix.
And with all due respect, Your Honor, I read that a little bit differently. What he is arguing, in my opinion, is that he's disagreeing with the judge on the factual finding that he, by a preponderance of the evidence, committed that uncharged conduct. He's not arguing on constitutional grounds, nor did his attorney argue on constitutional grounds. He's basically disagreeing with the court that he committed that illegal conduct. And I would like to address the factual issue for a moment of whether or not the court considered acquitted conduct. Just for the record, it's very clear that Judge Herndon stated that he could consider acquitted conduct, but it's not at all clear that he did. The four-level enhancement in the pre-sentence report is clearly based on the felonious restraint and battery charges that were uncharged. And I don't think that actually changes the legal analysis of this case, but I do think it's somewhat of a disingenuous argument to say that the court considered acquitted conduct in this case. In fact, Judge Herndon went to great pain to state exactly what testimony he was basing his opinion on, and it had nothing to do with acquitted conduct. As for the legal issue, I think I don't have to go through all of the cases, but all the way up from Blakely, Booker, Cunningham, all the way through Rita, the Supreme Court has consistently said the relevant question is whether the law forbids a judge to increase the sentence unless the judge finds a fact that the jury did not. And as long as it's within the statutory range, which this case is, that simply did not happen. And I don't really see how appellant counsel can say that the issue is unresolved. It's pretty clear from the case law. So just in conclusion, this was a reasonable sentence. The defendant had an extensive criminal history. The judge clearly considered all of the 3553 factors, the sentencing guidelines, and the pre-sentence investigation report. If there are no further questions, I would ask that you affirm the court's opinion.
Thanks, Ms. Gorofsky. Mr. Drury, how much time? 1 minute.
First of all, regarding the state of the law, you know, we did concede that this court has held in Hearn and in Horn and Price that acquitted conduct can't be or can be relied upon. You know, what we did say in the briefing is that there is an unresolved question in other circuits. There have been district court cases which are cited in the brief that say that after Booker, there is some doubt in this area. You know, and there has been some, you know, there have been some cert briefs that have been before the Supreme Court, and they haven't specifically addressed this issue, and they didn't specifically address the issue in Rita either, the issue being whether or not you can consider acquitted conduct and whether or not you can consider conduct that was never charged. As far as our reliance on acquitted conduct, you know, we don't say that the judge specifically considered it, but it did clearly inform his decision. He does go on and talk about acquitted conduct at some length, and he does preface it by saying that, I forget the exact phrase, but that, he doesn't need to rely on acquitted conduct, but if he were to, he could. It informed his decision. I'm not saying that it necessarily was the basis for his decision. And then just one last point, as far as the standard of review, I think from the record, whether or not the word Sixth Amendment or constitutional grounds were uttered, I think Mr. Wiley's trial counsel did object to the PSR on the basis that it enhanced Mr. Wiley's sentence based on conduct that was not acquitted, based on conduct that he was not convicted of and conduct that was not proven beyond a reasonable doubt. I think, you know, from the passage that you cited on page 10 of the hearing transcript, you know, I think that can be interpreted in different ways. He's saying that it wasn't proved. He's asking for an understanding of how he can, you know, be given this enhanced sentence based on something that wasn't proved. Whether or not the judge just did find it under preponderance, I think he's questioning, well, that was never put before a jury to be proved. So I think there is a question there. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Drury. You were court appointed, and you have the great thanks of our court for taking on the case and for doing such a fine job. So thank you, and please thank your law firm as well. And we thank you as well for the nice job that you did today. And the case will be taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.